Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker. Women's Football Weekly with Faker Brothers on TalkSport 2. The only dedicated women's football show on UK national radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Women's Football Weekly. Another busy day in the world of women's football with not one but two international managers stepping down. We'll be discussing the departures of both Phil Neville from England and Jane Ludlow from Wales, as well as Chelsea taking top spot in Barclays FAWSL after their win over Manchester United.
Oh, Frank Kirby could be in here. It's a lapse at the bat from United. Kirby! It's the woman in form. It's Frank Kirby for Chelsea.
City are at it again, this time smashing 7 past Villa to keep the pressure on the title contenders.
And Kelly has the chance and Kelly has the goal. Another mistake at the back for Aston Villa. Lisa Weiss couldn't get it clear. Chloe Kelly capitalised and Manchester City have 7.
Beardy is back. The former West Ham boss Matt Beard takes temporary charge at Bristol City as Tanya Oxtoby goes on maternity leave.
Homeschooling has been so tough, I'm not going to lie. Especially the maths. I just felt it was a different opportunity for me.
All that, plus a spotlight sit-down with Everton and England goalkeeper Sandy McKeever and all the results from the Championship. This is Women's Football Weekly, National Radio's only dedicated women's football show.
Women's Football Weekly with Faker Others.
Hi, I'm Fran Kirby and you're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
Hello, hello, happy Monday to you all. I have a couple of fantastic guests for you this evening. Former Manchester United and England goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain's back with us. How are you doing, Siobhan?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And Amy Ruskie is making her Women's Football Weekly debut from Goal.com. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm good, thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so I thought today we would probably end up just covering the football for a change. We finally had a full fixture list in the WSL, but no. It's never quiet, is it, in women's football? Phil Neville has left his role as England manager, which we knew was coming and have discussed at length. But then, just to throw extra work into the mix for us all, Jane Ludlow has left her role as Wales manager as well. We'll get to Jane in a second. Let's talk Neville. We talked at length last week about this on the show, but now it's more about who's going to take interim charge, isn't it? But I just want, first of all, Siobhan, your instant reaction to Phil Neville's departure and the legacy he's left, because it has now been confirmed that he has signed for Inter Miami.
Yeah, I think it's without question that his appointment as England manager has raised the profile of the game. You see so many more people talking about the England women's team, and the awareness has definitely increased. I think that's unquestioned. But obviously, pitch improved, and has the quality there kind of been consistent with the off pitch improvement. I mean, England are sixth in the world at the moment. They haven't probably improved as much as people would have like demanded, especially with the investment and the quality of the players that there are as well. So it's an exciting time for Serena Weidman to take over, and then obviously whoever gets that interim job for that weird kind of period, knowing that you're not going to get it afterwards, it's going to be strange, but it's an exciting period ahead.
Yeah, I just want to give you Phil Neville's quotes from earlier on. He said, "It's been an honour to manage England and I've enjoyed three of the best years of my career with the FA and the Lionesses. Players who wear the English shirts are the most talented and dedicated athletes I've ever had the privilege to work with. I wish England women every success in the future and look forward to following their journey in the years to come." Baroness Sue Campbell said, given his status as a former Manchester United and England player, he did much to raise the profile of our team and has used his platform to champion the women's game, worked tirelessly to support our effort to promote more female coaches, and used his expertise to develop many of our younger players. And you can't really argue with some of that, can you, Amy?
No, I think probably the one thing that will last with Neville, his biggest part of maybe this legacy that he leaves, is the younger players that he's brought through. You know, you look at Lauren Hemp, who was given her debut by Neville, and Beth Mead, I think, as well, was another that was given a debut by him. And there's a lot of those players that even before Neville's time that were given their debuts by managers before that have developed massively under Neville and been given that chance. You know, maybe it stems from him being a youngster coming through at Manchester United at the time when they said kids don't win anything, and he kind of came through in that time, and he's given a lot of young players that are the future of this England team their chance.
Yeah, and look, there is a lot of negativity on social media regarding Phil Neville's tenure, but you can't argue with exactly what both of you have said in terms of the good stuff that he's done. And I always think it's better to look at the positives of what somebody has brought and things that the team can improve on going forward. And we did have some really good times under him over the last 3 years. Now is the chance for somebody else to come in. We talked last week about who's possibly able to take on this interim role, because obviously Bev Priestman recently has gone to Canada Women as head coach. Mo Marley, who's been in caretaker charge before, has retired. And then we've seen Rhianne Skinner go and manage Tottenham. So who else is left? And are we expecting it to be an internal appointment, Siobhan?
Oh, it's a very good question. I think if I had the answer to that, I'd definitely put a bet on tonight. But it's the difficulty of the period of time that it is. There's so many good managers, good young managers, female managers as well out there at the moment. And they're all in positions that they're not going to want to leave for a 6 month, 9 month period of time. So it's kind of, how do you find someone to fill that gap, but also understands the model that England want to play with, understands England's philosophy, their DNA. I know it's Team GB as well, but I suppose it depends on what are the requirements of the role. And
well, I think it's going to be looking at someone separate roles. I think that from my understanding, that they're recruiting for an interim England manager, and that is going to be separate to whoever would be Serena Weigman's assistant when she takes over in August after leading the Netherlands at the Olympics. And it would also be separate to the Team GB role. So we're talking three different roles here and three different recruitment processes, if you like. But you would expect, would you not, Amy, that perhaps the FA would want somebody who already knows the inner workings of the FA and is perhaps on their own coaching journey?
Yeah, I think the one positive, I mean, it's a bit of a crazy situation for the FA at the moment. Obviously, like we say, Skinner and Priestman both left recently, so there's no obvious replacement. But I guess the good thing is they say they've been searching for a replacement for Rhianne Skinner since November. So you'd hope that they've had, you know, a couple of months to kind of scope out the candidates, and they say they'll hopefully make an announcement in the coming days. So I guess that's showing that, you know, they have been looking, and hopefully that means that, you know, somebody is lined up and ready to come in.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's discuss the other big departure of the day, because I think there were a lot of people two and two making five when it was announced that Jane Ludlow, the Wales manager, was going to be stepping down after 6 years in charge. People were linking the two, but actually if you went down the press release a little bit further and dig into it, it shows that she's going to take a role with FIFA and a technical role. What more do we know about that, Amy?
I mean, it was quite brief, really. Like you say, a lot of us missed it in the press release as well. I think what it sounds like is that it wouldn't necessarily rule her out of any managerial position that maybe came up.
In terms of the Team GB role, are you thinking?
Yeah, well, Team GB or anything else, you know, I think her name has been, it's not really been in the frame for Team GB before, but obviously she was really heavily linked to that West Ham job that recently went to Ollie Harder. So, you know, it might not mean that we don't see her at a club or in a Team GB role, but yeah, it's definitely something I don't think many of us were expecting when we opened that press release, for sure.
Would she go from Wales to England interim boss? Could you see at all, Siobhan?
If I'm honest, I couldn't see her going to be the England manager, but Team GB, yeah, definitely. Why not? She's had great success with bringing through young players with the Welsh team. They've narrowly missed out on qualification for the last two tournaments, which I'm sure she'll be really frustrated about. So to have the opportunity to then manage at a major tournament would be fantastic for her. And she's got the respect of a lot of players because of what she's achieved in the game as a player. But she's also got the respect of players because of what she's done and who she is and how she develops players as a manager. So yeah, it's definitely a really interesting option for Team GB.
Jane Ludlow herself said, "It's been a fantastic learning environment for me personally, and I'm proud of what we've achieved over the last 6 years as a group of staff and players whom I want to thank. I'm looking forward to the next challenges, one of which is an exciting opportunity I have to be part of a technical leadership team at FIFA." Amy, who are we thinking are the potential candidates to take over from Jane Ludlow?
I think the thing with the job she's done at Wales is that she's been doing a lot of different jobs, hasn't she? I know that she didn't just, you know, kind of manage the team. She was doing a lot of other stuff with, you know, the pathways and all sorts of jobs behind the scenes. So I think one of the things I'm quite interested to see is if that continues for the next person. To be honest, at this early stage, I'm trying to think of somebody off the top of my head that could be in that position, but I think it will be particularly interesting to see if the person who succeeds her is doing all these other jobs as well, or if they'll change the role to make it just about managing that senior team, because, you know, Ludlow's legacy will be beyond just the team on the pitch, because she's done so much stuff for the Welsh FA elsewhere and in so many different roles.
Anyone you can think of, Siobhan?
Well, I've definitely seen Jess Fishlock's name bandied about a few times across Twitter today,
and
won't thank me for mentioning her if it means she has to retire, because I think she'll want to carry on playing football till she's gone 50. but yeah, she's definitely someone that, whether it's right time now, but she's definitely someone that I could see in the future being involved within the Welsh team, and I'm sure she'll have aspirations to manage her country at some point.
Interesting. Well, we shall wait and see. And of course, we wish both Phil Neville and Jane Ludlow the best of luck. And we look forward to working with and speaking to their replacements in due course as well. You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers alongside Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruskie. Coming up, Super Fran is at it again as Chelsea beat Manchester United to go top.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app and on your smart speaker. Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the home for women's football.
This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the only show on national radio dedicated to women's football. With me, Faye Carruthers, former England and Manchester United goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruskie from Goal. Don't forget, if you do miss any of our shows, or if you want to listen again, our podcast is available on the TalkSport app, so you can download it today and go to our podcast section. Right, the Barclays FA WSL. We finally had a full fixture list, which was very exciting. So let's start with the top of the table clash that everybody was excited about this weekend.
Another chance for Kirby! And off the post! And now it's turned in! It's Pernilla Harder for Chelsea. The champions in front at King's Meadow. James, might have heard Casey Stoney there saying, get LJ on the ball. She's on it now. And she might hit this, you know. She did! And she scored! How about that from Lauren James? And that's what happens when you get her on the ball. Oh, Frank Kirby could be in here. It's a lapse at the back from United. Kirby! It's the woman in form. It's Frank Kirby for Chelsea.
Well, she is the woman in form, isn't she, Frank Kirby? It finished just 2, Manchester United 1. Amy Ruski, you were there. Did it live up to the hype?
Yeah, it was a great game of football, actually. I think when it started, we were surprised by how the pace of the game was absolutely ridiculous in the first 15, 20 minutes. It was just constant. Obviously, Manchester United were pressing really high and Chelsea were creating chance after chance after chance, and they could have almost been 3-0 up after 15 minutes. It was just such a chaotic game of football to start with.
Yeah, Sam Kerr had plenty of chances, didn't she? But just, I mean, we've seen this from her in games before. We've seen her be amazingly clinical, and we've also seen her have some shockers, Siobhan.
Yeah, I mean, she gets in such fantastic positions. Her movement, her running off the ball, Fran Kirby's link-up play with her to find her has been immense, especially the last couple of games. But yeah, her final play and her clinical finishing just hasn't been there. And it's frustrating to see it because she does all the hard work. She gets there, she gets in those positions, but just isn't finding the back of the net at the moment. I think for Emma Hayes, she'd be more frustrated if she wasn't getting in those positions. It's a positive you've got to take. If your strikers aren't getting in goal scoring opportunities, then that's an additional problem.
Yeah, she did say afterwards, Emma Hayes, the Chelsea manager, though, didn't she, that, you know, I think she gets a bit exasperated when they don't take their chances because, you know, at some point they'll get punished. Pernilla Harder, though, was there to put them one up in the 30th minute. But that came from Fran Kirby trying to flash a shot across the face of goal to reach the far corner, and it hit the post, and fastest to rebound was Harder, Amy.
Yeah, I think Chelsea were, you know, it was well overdue, that lead at that point. They, like we say, they had so many chances, and Man United defended that. You know, I can't remember who it was, but one of the Manchester United players had headed in and nearly went in, and Amy Turner cleared it off the line. Then, you know, she nearly blocked the Harder shot. It was a bit of a scruffy one, but I don't think that Chelsea or Harder will be complaining about that at all.
No, I'll tell you what, Casey Stoney won't be complaining about Lauren James either, because she came on as a substitute in the second half, got United back into it, Siobhan, and it was a beautiful goal.
It was. It's what you know you can get from Lauren James. She's a fantastic player. She struggled a bit with injury through this season, and she's kind of been in and out trying to get back, finding that bit of form. But you know that if you can get the ball to her, she can create that bit of magic without really needing any help from anybody else. And you obviously heard Casey Stoney on the sideline saying, get the ball to LJ. And that's what you need to do. You just need to give her the ball and get her in those kind of positions around the edge of the 18-yard box, and she can create magic like that.
Talk to us about that defending, though, because that was shocking just a few minutes later.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal, was it? And I'm sure Casey Stoney, as a centre-back, would have been holding her head in her hands in frustration, because all the hard work you do and one lapse of concentration, that's sometimes all it takes and can cost you. I think we sometimes overcomplicate football massively, and all it took was one long ball, a goal, a win, and Chelsea are back on top of the league.
We love a bit of overcomplication in the media as well as on the pitch. Don't you worry about that.
Gives you something to talk about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Chelsea had 17 shots, 6 of them on target. We mentioned that, Amy. Source of frustration sometimes for Emma Hayes, I think. But Chelsea have equaled Manchester City's WSL record of going 31 games unbeaten. They've not lost in the league since January 2019, which was a 3-2 defeat to Birmingham, which nobody would have written at the time. It means that they go top on goal difference, and they have a game in hand as well. That game in hand is against Spurs. They surely look like retaining their title, don't they, in this kind of form?
Yeah, I think so. And I think Emma Hayes knows that as well. You know, speaking to the press after, she's been in all the situations. She's been top of the table. She's been chasing. She's been, you know, favourite. She's been underdogs. And she was saying, you know, when you're top of the table, whether you're off the pace, nobody writes at the end of the season, if you lift that trophy, that they were the chasing team. It you know, it's all about how they handle that pressure. And they've won so many titles and they know how to handle that pressure. And I think it was a credit to Man United as well, to how close they kind of came to this team that's been in the works for 9 years, like you say, setting that unbeaten record, equaling it. And Casey Stoner's side weren't really that far off in that second half from getting a point if they just depend that long ball.
Yeah, we'll just focus on Manchester United again in a second, but I want to play you some Emma Hayes audio, because after the game, she said she was not going to get carried away despite that incredible record.
No team has retained the title. No team in this country, in the modern day WSL. You realise how hard this is. This is extremely difficult. So to go unbeaten for 2 years with that quality is an unbelievable achievement. But it's not a trophy. It's the sort of thing you could talk about later on, but it's not a trophy. And as I was reminded by a Doc Rivers podcast I was listening to, it's not about what you have, it's about what you haven't got yet. And we haven't yet got a title the season after we've won one. We haven't got a Champions League. We haven't got a, you know, successive Continental Cup. This team has a lot of things to achieve yet. So I don't get carried away with sort of records like that, to be honest.
She's always pragmatic, isn't she? Chelsea manager Emma Hayes. And I'm going to be looking up Doc Rivers, another podcast to add to my ever-growing list of podcasts. Don't forget, Women's Football Weekly have one as well. If you've not downloaded that for your exercise walks during lockdown, then please do. From a Manchester United point of view, though, what we haven't mentioned is that Leah Galton and Casey Stoney were both one manager and player of the month in the Barclays WSL this season, which is pretty impressive. And they have really, and are really, pushing the traditional top three, Siobhan, this season. Can you see Manchester United staying up at this level for years to come?
Yeah, most definitely. I think as a club, Manchester United is huge. And they obviously didn't come into the league when it began, that they're relatively new, but what they've done is they've done it the right way. They've invested well. They've built a team and built a squad that can compete over time, that's got better and better. There's so many young players in that team that have come into the England senior team over the last 6-7 months or so, and they've been doing fantastically well. And that's credit to Casey Stoney, and it's credit to Manchester United, and there's no reason why they can't maintain that challenge at the top of the league this season and for many more years to come.
Yeah, definitely. And they were certainly in this game, weren't they? But eventually losing 2-1 to the current champions at Chelsea. Manchester City went on another rout, Amy Ruski, 7-0 against Aston Villa. And they were 6 up by half-time.
I know. And if you look at the lineup as well, they were shoehorning players in some positions. I mean, Esme Morgan, I think, was playing at centre-back. It was, yeah, when you looked at the lineup, you look to the bench and you thought, if they're struggling in this game, who are they going to bring off the bench, really? You know, they've not got too much on there. And in the end, they didn't need it. They had a couple of young players come on and make the debuts, which was nice. But yeah, I think Manchester City are one of those teams that really struggled at the beginning of the season. And now we're kind of seeing them get into the flow of things. And they look like the Manchester City that we've known for, you know, all the time they've been in the WSL, this attacking, brilliant side. And to do that without so many players and without Gareth Taylor on the sideline as well was really impressive.
Yeah, Manchester City with a lot of players out, self-isolating. But it does show their strength in depth, doesn't it, Siobhan? And, you know, interesting to see City turn up at a game like this as well and be so clinical, especially without Sam Mewis, who's been, you know, their best player arguably this season. But of course, Jill Scott just jumps straight in there, takes her place, and it was just like old times.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually at that game, and it was great to see so many goals and a live game of football for once. But yeah, you talk about the kind of them having a lot of players missing. You look at that starting 11, every single one of those players was still a senior international player. Yes, some of them played in slightly different positions to where they normally would, but they're a fantastic team. And as you said, there's such strength and depth there now, which potentially there wasn't in the past. Potentially, if they'd have had these kind of issues, they would have had the kids on the pitch, and it does change the whole situation completely. But you look at Jill Scott that came in. She's an incredible player. She's a fantastic role model for the young ones that are coming through. But she deserves to be playing football still. She's not old, she's not past it or anything like that. She needs to be on the pitch and she needs to be playing football. And you saw that on Sunday, where I think it might have been her first start or one of her limited showings so far this season. But she put on an incredible performance. She scored a goal. She got a couple of assists. Well, I'm not sure they were assists, but through balls to create assists. And she ran the show from the midfield for me. And then you look at Chloe Kelly, Lauren Hemp, such free-flowing football, and it's exciting to watch for young players coming through, not just for Manchester City, but also for England.
Yeah, I tell you what though, it wasn't exciting to watch from Gemma Davis's point of view. The Aston Villa manager basically said her side just didn't show up, and they didn't really, did they? And they've been really disappointing for me this season, Siobhan. What did you make of them?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I felt a bit sorry for them, really. I think they worked really hard for the first 20 minutes, half an hour. I think it was 2 minutes they conceded. Then the second goal went in at 17 minutes. And then it was from then on, it kind of went to pot. I think there were another four goals in the next 12 minutes before half time. They worked hard to try and defend and to try and stay compact for that first half hour. But it was a little bit relentless from Manchester City. The quality and the gulf between the two teams was just too big. Credit to them for the second half. They only conceded one goal. They banked up a lot more. Yes, Manchester City took their foot off the pedal, but it was a much better second half performance and would have given them a little bit of confidence and self-belief after that second half performance.
Yeah, they've got Reading up next, Villa midweek as well. So they'll need a decent bounce back result. We'll talk about Reading's draw with Arsenal next. You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers, alongside Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruski. If you miss any of the show, you can catch up by downloading the TalkSport app and subscribing to our podcast. Just search TalkSport Women's Football Weekly. So coming up, we'll also hear from the new Bristol City interim boss, Matt Beard. You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the UK's only national radio show dedicated to women's football. I'm Faye Carruthers, and with me tonight we've got former England and Manchester United goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruski from Goal. Right, four other games to get ourselves through. Reading 1, Arsenal 1. Pretty sluggish and slow Arsenal, actually. Reading took an early lead in this one and defended it well to earn a point in the end. And two former Arsenal players as well turning in that fifth-minute goal. Emma Mitchell's free kick scored by Lauren Bruton in the end, Amy. Arsenal just weren't enjoyable to watch in this, were they?
No, and it's not something that we've said many times of a Joe Montemurro Arsenal team or of a Joe Montemurro team ever, really. It was a bit of a surprise. And Reading are a great team, obviously well-established at that top of the table, but Arsenal have set the tone over the years for being that team that beats the teams that are, you know, not Manchester City or Chelsea. They always seem to beat those teams that are below them in the table. And it was just a very rare slip up from them, and it'll be interesting to see if they bounce back immediately or if it is a little bit of a spell that they're going to go through.
Vivienne Miedema obviously got their equaliser from close range. They had chances to win it as well, but these are really important and key points in the title race that they've lost now, Siobhan. They're 3 points behind Manchester United and Chelsea. Can they gain this back, or do you think, you know, too many slip-ups now?
I think with the amount of games that you've got in the WSL, it's really difficult once you lose one or two games to get back and to win the league. But this season, it does seem like there are going to be more moments when teams take points off each other. Obviously, players are missing through COVID, through isolating, through injuries. There's a lot more opportunities for teams to take points off those top teams. And potentially, it might not be as smooth running as it has been in the past.
Oh, that makes it exciting, though. I love that. But when you look at the stats from Arsenal, 8 points from 6 games is not the kind of form that Joe Montemurro will be happy with. And he said that they were below par for the whole game, didn't get into any kind of rhythm and didn't position themselves well enough for the passing opportunities, and that they need to fix that. How much of that was down to Arsenal, and how much of it was actually down to the way Kelly Chambers had set Reading up, Amy?
I think we know now that Reading are such a well-organised team. And it's not to say that they're dull, because they're great going forward at times too. And, you know, they've got a lot of talent in there. You look particularly in that midfield with Jess Fishlock and Farrah Williams. So they're just very, you know, quite well-drilled. And I think for Reading, it's such a positive result, because they got battered by Arsenal in that opening weekend game. It was 6-1, I think it was, and To see them kind of come into this one and learn from that day and put things right and pick up a really positive point. When you look at Reading this season, they probably deserve more points and better results than they've got when you watch them play. So it was nice to see Reading get a good result this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. They've got Villa next. Arsenal play West Ham. Everton, though, back to winning ways. 4-0 winners over Bristol City. Obviously, City have only had time for one training session with their new manager, Matt Beard, who's come in as maternity cover for Tanya Oxtoby, who's expecting a baby in March. Before we talk about the actual game itself, let's hear from Matt about his new role and exactly how this maternity cover is going to work.
Yeah, obviously it's different. I know Tanya quite well. We've got a good working relationship. We've got a good relationship, I guess, as coaches. I knew Lee Billiard from Boston Breakers, which was a big part of me coming here, because, you know, we had a really good working relationship at Boston, and, you know, we was devastated. We never got the opportunity to see that project out with all the work that went into it. So that was a big factor in me coming here. But it's also a different challenge, you know, obviously in the league. Bristol City have been struggling. I think Wednesday night proved, even with 3 players that probably would have started the game, you know, the fight, that if they show that fight and that hunger and that desire, maybe they can we can get ourselves out of the situation we are in the league. It's a good platform for me to build on with the players. It's a strange world at the moment with the way this new strain of coronavirus has affected our country. I've had a nice break. Homeschooling has been so tough, I'm not going to lie, especially the maths. I just felt it was a different opportunity for me. It's something different. It is unique. Is this the first time that there's been maternity cover in the women's game? I can't remember another time. But for me, it was about the people that I was going to be working with. And you know, that whatever I decided to do next, or whatever I do long term, you know, for me, it's the people that I work with. I have complete freedom, and that was one of the things that when I spoke with Liam and Mark at the club, that was important, because there's no point me coming in and doing, you know, someone else's work. You know, it's me and Tanya, as I said, we've got a good relationship. We've had numerous conversations. We've done a handover, but I have free reins to do what I need to do.
to the new Bristol City manager, Matt Beard, there on maternity cover for Tanya Oxterby. Really interesting the way that they've worked together on this. I think he's right. I don't remember a case of any maternity cover for a manager previously. I don't know whether either of you do, but certainly you need a lot of trust in this kind of matter because Tanya's trusting Matt to try and get them out of the situation that they're in, Siobhan.
Yeah, of course, you need trust and you need a good relationship there. But Matt Beard would not want to go into a job where he doesn't want to do the best for those players and for that team, even if it's only a short period of time that he's there. His reputation is on the line as well as those players that are in the team. He'll want to go in there and do a job and keep them up in the league. It's a very difficult job to do. They've got, 2 points? They haven't won a game so far this season in the league, and it's going to be a really tough job for him. But I'm sure he'll relish it, and I'm sure he'll do his utmost to use his experience and use his ability to keep them in the league.
Absolutely. Big job on his hands, but if anyone was going to do it, it would be Matt Beard, that's for sure. Everton, though, back to winning ways. First win in the league since the 11th of October. You know, we've had Willie Kirk on the show. In fact, we've had Matt Beard, Tanya Oxterby as well on this show. Plenty of others too on Women's Football Weekly. But when Willie Kirk came on, they were flying high, doing really well. And then something just seemed to go a little bit wrong. I know how much they miss Valerie Govan, for sure. But Izzy Christensen on fire in this game. 2 goals. And an assist, and she's just been fantastic, hasn't she, Amy?
Yeah, it's been really nice to see as well, because before she left for Lyon, I mean, she was one of my favourite players to watch in this league when she was at Manchester City and for England. She was fantastic, and it's really nice to see her getting back to that now after having a difficult kind of spell in Lyon with the injuries and such. So really good to see her picking up that form, and she's playing with a smile on her face, and it's good for England as well as being good for Everton.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, Everton fans, we have a little surprise for you with your goalkeeper, Sandy McKeever, our spotlight interview. That's coming up at the end of the show, so don't leave us. Stay tuned for that. Now, Matt Beard's former team, West Ham, lost 1-0 to Spurs. A frustrating start for the new Hammers manager, Ollie Harder here, Siobhan.
Yeah, definitely. That would have been a game that they would have been looking to get some points from. I think you have a new manager, you have that sudden burst of energy. You've got players wanting to prove their worth, wanting to stay in the starting lineup, wanting to come on and make a difference. You've got that little burst, that little something extra to prove. But unfortunately, it couldn't get them a point. It couldn't get them the win. And yeah, it's not looking that positive down there.
No, 9 shots on target. Spurs just needed the one. Lucy Quinn with the only goal of the game. Harder to change the formation. He went 3 at the back and was pretty pleased with what he saw from his side. Obviously, he's only had 2 weeks with them as well. But he said he's seen the squad implementing the pressing style that he wants them to play. And that's what's really important, isn't it, Amy? That they buy into what he wants to do.
Yeah, and I spoke to Ollie's old assistant, who's now taking his job in Norway at the women's club he was at, and he was talking about how he wants to play this attractive attacking style of football. They like to play press aggressively, but it sounds like he's quite flexible as well, in that when they come up against, you know, Manchester United or Manchester City, they will accept that, you know, they're not going to have the possession that they want, and they can play a little bit more direct and be a little bit more pragmatic if they need to be. So yeah, I think it'll take time, obviously, to change a whole style, especially midway through the season. But yeah, it sounds like he's got some good ideas, and if the players are already buying into it, that's a positive sign for sure.
Well, the Tottenham players are certainly buying into whatever Rianne Skinner is doing with them since she took over in November. They've been really impressive, and you only need to win a game by a goal to nil, Siobhan.
You do, and I think one of the biggest things for them is the clean sheet. I know probably I'm a little bit biased as a former goalkeeper, and I think everything starts with a clean sheet and a good goalkeeping performance. But the more you can keep clean sheets, the more you can limit your opposition's opportunities and shots on target, that the more chance that you're gonna have to get points from matches. And I know they had to defend quite deep at times, and they were put under quite a bit of pressure from West Ham, predominantly probably down to their change of system and trying to press a little bit higher. But they managed to do it. They managed to keep them out. Keeping a clean sheet was probably really important for them yesterday.
Yeah, you say keeping a clean sheet is important, but I guarantee both Birmingham City and Brighton and Hove Albion would like to buy a goal at the moment. 0-0 it finished between the two of them. Not particularly surprising, given that they've both scored a total of 16 goals between them. Obviously been hit by COVID cases and injuries as well. Brighton had to recall some loan players, played plenty of players out of position, academy players as well. Pretty tough for them at the moment, Amy.
Yeah, and I think given that, they'll be happy with the point, will be Brighton. Especially because, you know, Birmingham have turned around so fantastically under Carla Ward. I think, and you wouldn't expect anything less, I don't think, from a Hope Powell team. You can imagine how well drilled her players will be, no matter who she kind of brings in. They're always very well organised, and, you know, goals might be hard to come by, but if you keep a clean sheet, then, you know, you're always going to get at least a point.
Yeah, what do either of you know about 17-year-old Emily Murphy? Exciting young England talent, joined Birmingham on loan from Chelsea last week, and she went straight into the starting lineup, Siobhan.
Yeah, I think it's great that Chelsea are giving their young players opportunities to go out on loan. There's a lot of teams out there that haven't got the depth that the Big Four have at the moment, and that they're crying out for players to come in and do a job. And Chelsea has got so many players, so many world-class international players, that it can be difficult at times for young players to get experience, to get game time, whether that be in the Championship, whether that be in the FAWSL. It's great to see them out there. I think Jamie Lee Napier, she's gone to Birmingham as well on loan from Chelsea, and it's good that they're getting that opportunity. And it's going to be a different situation, a different scenario to what they'd experience at Chelsea. So sometimes it's nice to see it from the other side, when you're not necessarily at one of the top clubs where they're given everything.
Yeah, very much excited to see what they can do. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faker Ruthers. You've just been hearing the thoughts of Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruskey from Goal. If you miss any of the show, you can find our podcast. Download the TalkSport app and search for Women's Football Weekly. Next, we're going to round up the Championship and shine our spotlight on Everton's Sandy McKeever.
Women's Football Weekly with Faker Ruthers on TalkSport 2.
You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faker Ruthers, and keeping you company with me is former England and Manchester United goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain and Amy Ruskey from Goal.com. Now then, the Championship. Big news. Vicky Jepson left Liverpool by mutual consent on Tuesday. She'd been at the club for 12 years and during a difficult last few years as well, which included relegation from the WSL. She'd been in charge since 2018. Liverpool then went on this weekend to lose 2-1 to top of the table Leicester. Leicester ahead of Durham by 3 points. Liverpool on 11 back in fourth, meaning that their promotion chase looks well and truly over. Siobhan, your former side, Liverpool, two-time WSL champions, obviously. Where do they go from here?
I think it's really disappointing to see where they are now compared to where they were 4 or 5 years ago, winning the WSL twice. I think it's frustrating as a football fan to see a club that's one of the best in the world, that's just won the Men's Premier League, to then have its women's team that's really struggling, that gets relegated from the top league and doesn't look like it's having the support that it needs to be successful. I think it raises a lot of questions as to how much the team and the club is integrated and how much the women's team is valued within that club.
Vicky Jepson, whenever she spoke to us, and obviously she was employed by the club, so of course she would, she always said that she had plenty of support from the club itself whenever she spoke on Women's Football Weekly. But it does beg the question, exactly as Siobhan said, Amy, of whether or not they really are truly investing in Liverpool. Because you look at Leicester, who are now under the King Power umbrella and train at the same ground as the men do, and are very much part of, you know, Leicester City as a club, and look at the success they're getting. I mean, is this kind of fair criticism?
I think it's an interesting comparison to have this fixture, isn't it? Because, you know, you can see both kind of You know, you have this club that's not as big as Liverpool, but is, you know, doing some much bigger things because of that investment. I think though the press that Liverpool have got, you know, they've their reputation on the women's side and obviously as a club in general as well has been tarnished a lot recently because of the reports that have come out and a lot of the, you know, players. I remember that point where lots of them left last year and they were talking about they wanted to enjoy their football again, and a lot of people picked up on that. But I think the way that the bad press, the good thing about that is that I think there are starting to be some changes. You know, there seems to be like a little bit more investment there and things like that. And that's the good side of it, that they've been called out on it, and it does sound like that they are changing things behind the scenes. Obviously, it's not showing in the results this season, unfortunately for them. But yeah, it shows that, you know, by people coming out and saying something about this, that hopefully it will turn things around and they'll get back up to that top division, because we do want to see, you know, that Merseyside derby, that Liverpool versus Man United rivalry and stuff. So yeah, it's a shame to see where they are now.
Yeah, it certainly
I just wanted to jump on that, on board that comment a little bit. I think you talk about the changes being made. I'd like to question if they necessarily are, because you mentioned that at the end of last season quite a few players left and they spoke about wanting to enjoy their football again. I left Liverpool 2-3 years ago, a couple of years before that, and I think 10 or 11 players left that year. And you saw exactly the same comments being made, players wanting to enjoy football again, wanting to feel valued. So it's kind of, how many times does that need to happen within a club before the difference gets made, before people start listening? And we talk about the training ground, and I think that's been in the media quite a lot recently. But while I was at the club, I don't want to dig too much at Liverpool, although I'm sure Manchester United supporters that follow me will quite enjoy it. But I was at the club when the plans were going through for the training ground. And I remember thinking, oh, this will be great. We trained at Widnes Rugby Stadium at the time on 3G. I thought this will be fantastic to have a new training ground. It'll obviously be built for everybody. But that there was no consideration given to the women's team, and that there's no space for them there, which for me at the time kind of signalled their importance and their value that they've placed on women's football.
It's certainly something that we'll dig into a little bit more. We have done that on Women's Football Weekly, but clearly still problems going on at Liverpool. Very little time left, so I just want to rattle through the other results. Sheffield United 3, Coventry 0, Crystal Palace 0, Durham 1, London Bees 0-0 with London City. The Conti Cup semi-final draw was made, so Manchester City or Chelsea, who play on Wednesday, will play West Ham or Durham, who play on Thursday, and Leicester City have a tie against Bristol City as well. Just about enough time to bring you a lovely little spotlight interview that TalkSport's Bradley Hayden has done with Everton and England goalkeeper Sandy McKeever about her unconventional journey to being a number one.
I think when I was younger, it was just a case of my mum wanted me to be involved in sport. I don't think any of us really know why I picked football. Maybe because I saw the boys play that at school, but no, I just think it was something that took my interest in. And then so my mum just took me to a local boys team, which I started playing outfield. As I got older, girls couldn't play with in the same team as boys anymore. So then it was a case of moving my development on to find a girls team. And that's when I joined Crewe Academy. And then that was when, a few years later, I made the transition from becoming an outfield player to a goalkeeper. And then since then, moved to Everton, had a few years out in America at college, and then back here at Everton where my goalkeeping journey, I think, really, really started.
And I was reading up, and you first started out as a striker when you were younger. So how did the move to going back into goalkeeper come about?
It was the last year I was at Crewe, I think. For whatever reason, we needed, I think towards the end of the season, we were just having goalkeeper problems and we just needed someone to fill in. At the time, I thought that was a good idea, jumping in goal, because you play around with your friends and it seems a good idea. And it turned out that I really enjoyed it. I think that took both me and my parents by surprise. And then at the end of that season, a number of academies closed down, so I had to go trial elsewhere. And then that was the big decision, well, do I stick being an outfield player or do I give the goalkeeping a go? And that's when I joined Everton. And well, my dad and I were talking about it, I think, the other day, actually. And we said, well, just give this first year as a goalkeeper a go. And then at the end of that year, depending on whether I've liked it or enjoyed it, then we'll stick with it. If not, then I'll just go back to being a striker.
And in hindsight now, do you feel you made the right decision?
I think so, yeah. We always joke about where would I have gone if I was still a striker, and the girls that know me at Everton will know that running up and down a pitch definitely wasn't something I enjoy. So yeah, I think playing in goal was definitely the right idea.
Everton and England goalkeeper Sandy McKeever talking to TalkSport's Bradley Hayden there. Siobhan Chamberlain, as a goalkeeper, just very quickly, could Sandy McKeever be England's number one in the future?
Oh, I definitely think she could. She has fantastic potential. She's done really well since she's come back from America. She's got that experience from playing over there. But she's also grasped her opportunity at Everton with both hands, and definitely one to watch for the future.
Listen, Amy Ruski had a fantastic story about biscuits regarding Sandy, but we'll have to save that for her next appearance on Women's Football Weekly. It's been a pleasure having you both with me. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you both again soon. Next week, former Brighton, Liverpool and Everton defender Fern Whelan is with us. It's a big thank you, though, to Siobhan Chamberlain, Amy Ruski, Sandy McKeever and Matt Beard, and to all of you, as ever, for listening. Don't forget, if you miss any of our show or you want to listen back to any of our specials from last year, download the Women's Football Weekly podcast via the TalkSport app.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.